WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Well, good morning. On a morning where there were no Powerball winners, jackpot grows to an estimated $1.3 billion. That is unbelievable to me. $1 billion lottery. Well, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We're not winning the lottery. Nobody's counting on it. One in 300 million. So let's talk about the real world for the rest of these 2 hours. By the way, phone lines open 404-872-0750. The number here in the studio, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I go over, looking some of the notes from the last couple of weeks here on Money Matters, and then looking at headlines today, it's amazing how many scary words are in the vernacular. Violent, dreadful, worst. These are the words that have been describing the market that we're living through right now here for, it's not just been this week, but for the last several weeks here. If you're 40 years old, this market in the past week, what we just lived through, probably doesn't bother you, really shouldn't bother you. In fact, it should excite you. It's actually a very good thing. The last thing you want as a 30 or 40-year-old investor is a market that hovers and hovers and hovers around or plateaus around a high, high level and just stays there. It's these corrections that are when younger investors really make their money. It's when the market pulls back 10 and 20%. That's when you really make money as an investor, not when you're sticking money in at a high level. It's really when markets pull back. So if you're 40, this market doesn't bother you. Even if you're 50, it doesn't bother you, or it shouldn't bother you. But if you're already in retirement, then this is the kind of week that will give you anxiety. There's just no, not everyone, but most people, and I can tell from the last couple of weeks, particularly this week, I can tell the sentiment of how people are feeling. It's easy to judge how many phone calls and emails I get in a given week and what the topic is about. And of course, the topic this week had to do with the market, stock market dropping precipitously in headline stocks drop 6% in worst ever year opening. That's the headline. Stocks drop 6% in worst ever year opening. We can make that sound even scarier. Worst week ever in the history of mankind for stocks. But we're not going to go there because it was the worst opening week. Don't let that confuse you. There are a lot of weeks where the markets have dropped 6%. It just happened to be the first week of the year. This is the worst opening week we've seen. So that's the kind of headline that's just not comforting. There's a big fat bear on the cover of Barron's in a cushy armchair chair, as if the bear's kind of watching TV, except the bear's watching you, and it's giving you the evil eye. The damage for the week, let's talk about the numbers. Minus 6% on the Dow and the S&P. Minus 7% for the NASDAQ. And just like that, boom, Dow, from its high, not all that long ago, down 11%. So that's a full-on correction. That's from the old high. S&P 500 down just right at the 10% mark. Dow was down 1,079 points this week, just for the week. The question you're asking yourself is why? That's the first question I think that comes to mind. What do you do about it? How do you live through this? Is there something broken? Should you do something? Should you go run? Should you get out? Is this another 2008? And these are the questions that we'll try to answer here this morning in a rational way. I'm not here to scare you. I'm not here to say the sky's falling because it isn't at all. But this is the kind of week that, to some extent, it kind of feels like it. You wake up, Chinese stock market down 7%, closes 30 minutes. Let's call it 30-minute Thursday for the Chinese stock market. That's how long their market was open on Thursday. Circuit breakers hit at 5, so down 5. These are new circuit breaker rules that the Chinese monetary authorities put in, or the market authorities. Hey, if it's down 5%, let's take a break. That's their new rule as of this week. Well, that happens, and then they take a break, then they reopen. They say, well, if it gets to a -7, then let's just close. That took all of 30 minutes on Thursday. The Shanghai Composite dropped 7% in 30 minutes worth of trading, and then they shut down. So they also realized, by the way, that that was a mistake. This is a newer economy. It's a newer stock market. Think of the Chinese stock market today as our market back in the 1930s or the 1940s. So there's a lot that they have not been through. There's a lot that they're still learning. So they test something like these new circuit breaker levels and what instead was supposed to calm stocks down, exacerbated volatility. So they said, well, maybe these circuit breakers will help calm things down. Instead, Chinese investors said, wait a minute, if I'm locked out at 5 and then I can get back in, but then the market closes if we're down 7, I better really sell and really get out as quickly as I can. And that's what happened. It actually magnified the volatility and it magnified the downdraft that we saw in the market, in the Shanghai Composite, in the Chinese stock market this week. And of course, that bleeds over to the rest of the world. And that sentiment and that fear, they export it from China all around the world. And that's exactly what we saw this week. Not to mention middle of the night, one night here, I don't know if it was Wednesday or Thursday, but evidently the North Koreans are testing hydrogen bombs. So you just layer this on top of Saudi-Iranian relations, H-bombs getting tested, Chinese stock market dropping 7%. No wonder we had a bad week here in the United States. On a relative basis, this was a great place to be, but it still was bad because there's really kind of no place as far as stocks are concerned to hide around the world. By the way, this is a good week to look at diversification and all these other things that didn't work as well as we would have liked them to work last year. This is the kind of week that they really did work. So diversification actually worked this week and worked really, really well. It's a nice reminder that there are places to hide. There just weren't a lot of places to hide when it came to stocks this week. So cover barons, big fat bear sitting in an armchair, giving you the evil eye. That's the sentiment right now in the world. Dow down 6, NASDAQ down 6 or 7. And we're in correction territory on the Dow and right at the correction line that somebody made up a long time ago. Hey, 10% means a correction. So, but you ask yourself, why is this happening? Is it the U.S. economy? Well, what are the latest big economic reports? Well, Friday's job report, probably the most overlooked jobs report I can ever remember. Nobody was talking about it. Nobody cares about it because we're worried about China and we're worried about a $1.3 billion lottery. So nobody talked about the jobs report. Friday, we reported jobs for December, up 292,000 new jobs for the month of December. Sure, some of those are probably part-time. You can look into the numbers and say some of them were for a really young set of the labor force and a labor set that looks like they're close to retirement. So a lot of that might have been part-time, but nonetheless, 292,000 new jobs. Unemployment stays, the rate stays flat at 5%. And the consumer continues to look really solid. Gas prices, oh, guess what? They're cut in half. January, this is a number from January 4th, but the average is $1.99. And it's probably headed lower because oil is even lower now than it was back a week or two ago. So gas prices are cut in half. That's good for all of our wallets. Housing continues to be very strong. Yet we see this drop of over 1,000 points in one week on the Dow. What's happening? Good economic numbers. Good gas prices going down. Housing strong. Unemployment lower than it's been for a very long period of time. Yet we get a drop of over 1,000 points on the Dow just in the last week. Welcome to investing. At any given time, there's a 10 or 15% layer of emotion. I think of it as just emotional froth. It's like the froth on the top of a cappuccino. It's very real, and it is something that is always there. Now, it can get, not necessarily always there, it can get added very quickly. So you can get a 10 or 15% emotional froth on top of what the market should really be trading at any time, any week, any month, any year, It can last for a year, can last for multiple years. But ultimately, remember what matters. What matters, companies earning a profit. That's what it all comes down to. So earnings, that's what really matters for stocks. Earnings and the growth of earnings. And by the way, if you have earnings, you can pay a dividend and you can have a steady dividend that allows for dividend payments so that a company that you're a part owner in can give you some sort of cash flow. But sentiment and emotion, that's what really impacts the underlying value on any given day for a stock or an ETF or a mutual fund that you own. And that's what makes investing so difficult, is that you don't know if this emotional froth can take the market above where it needs to be by a full 10% or 15, or below where it should be by a full 10 or 15%. That's part of what makes investing so difficult. Now, wild swings. Have we had wild swings before on the S&P? Of course we have. Let's think about this 1 week. Down 6%. You keep seeing headlines, oh, worst week ever. Really, it was the worst opening week out of 52 that we've seen. So don't let that part, don't misunderstand how bad this week was. It was a bad week, but we've had lots of weeks this bad and worse. And we've had days. We've had stock market days that were worse than this whole last week. January 20th, 2009. And let me demonstrate some of these numbers for you. Let's do a couple examples from 09, 2008, and 2000. Really bad days, but then other days that were the opposite of that. January 20th, 2009, this is S&P 500, down 5.25% in one day. December 1st, 2008, S&P 500 down 8.9% in one day. April 14th of the year 2000, S&P 500 down 5.8% in one day. So in these very same years, think, then this is demonstrating this emotional froth, how quickly it can appear and disappear or add or subtract to the market. March 23rd, 2009, market up 7.08% in one day. November 13th, 2008, market up 6.92% in one day. March 16th, 2000, market up 4.76%, almost 5%, just in one day. But why does it feel so bad every time this happens? Why is there this panic? Even though there's so little sense in a market like this, it moves so quickly. It's so much of this is the emotion and the sentiment of the market. And it has to do with how we're wired and in our brains and how they relate to how we think of losing or gaining money and as investors. And I'm going to talk about that in a couple different studies that are fascinating to me. I think it'll be fascinating to you. We've got to go quick news, weather, traffic. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, right here on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll cover breaking news, Kirk Mellish weather, and traffic red alerts throughout the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. The world is not ending, folks. Just a rough week in the market. And the froth that comes along with sentiment and emotion is playing a huge role right now. We had a bad week in China. North Korea tests an H-bomb. Saudi Arabia is fighting with Iran. The beginning of the year. And stocks dropped 6%. Really tough week for most investors. And I know people are nervous. But remember that this we are almost getting back to something that is more normal. So if you go back, and this is, if you look at what is called the VIX, which is a fear gauge, it's a way to measure, this has been around since 1990, to measure trading sentiment, whether you have the higher the VIX, the more fear is in the market, the more people are trying to protect themselves from loss. And if you go back over this whole period of time, 1990 to 2014, a third of the time, the VIX, the fear gauge, is between 20 and 30 as a nominal value. Long-term average is about 20. In 2013, only 1% of the time So 99% of the time, fear was much lower than that. So only 1% of the time in 2013 did the VIX ever get to between 20 and 30 as a measure. So we were in a period of time of really low volatility in 2013. Same thing in 2014. It only got to that level 5% of the time. This week, it was in that range. It was at 27. That's where it closed on Friday. So it may feel nasty or feel awful, but it's actually a very normal level. So since 1990, here's what the market has done during these different periods of time. When the VIX is below 20, when people are not afraid, and effectively things are kind of chugging along, markets average about 16% per annum. When the VIX gets into that above 20 range, where it is today, markets average close to 6%. So they're both okay. Of course, we'd take 16 over 6 all day long, but averaging 6% a year when the VIX is above 20 also isn't terrible. Just doesn't feel nearly as comfortable. So just because we have begun badly for 2016 does not mean that we have to end the year in negative territory. It doesn't mean that the entire year is broken. It means that right now investors are nervous, and it's going to take some sort of positive catalyst, really stability. And I think the stability will come in the commodity space, where we get some sort of price discovery, equilibrium, whatever you want to call it. Oil stopping going down. That will go a long way in stabilizing a lot of markets. And I want to talk about oil, whether historically can we tell if oil leads to recession or not, because right now oil prices are so precipitously falling, it almost feels like it's going to cause a recession. The question is, historically, has that ever really happened? We'll talk about that straight ahead with more Money Matters right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Hi, this is Scott Slade from Atlanta's Morning News and WSB. Our 24-hour news center delivers updates 4 times an hour all weekend. Depend on it. We'll be back Monday morning, 4:30 to 9 for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Stocks drop 6%, worst ever year opening. Comfortable headline, isn't it? And a big fat bear on the cover of Barron's giving you the evil eye. That's the world we live in today. Sensational journalism. Barron's is always, they always do this. And that's just something I've gotten used to over many, many years. And doesn't mean the end of the world is coming. It just means that right now, with markets down, it's a way to sell newspapers. And that's fine. But that's what makes investing so difficult, is that the world is not here to rationalize anything or calm you down. The world's here to scare you so that you do something. Advertisers want you to do something. They want you to buy or sell. They don't want you to just sit there. And that's part of why investing has probably gotten even more difficult over the last 2 decades, as the news cycle gets more ferocious and you can't avoid it. Television, radio, your smartphone, it's in your face all the time. And all of the emotion and the emotional froth that makes markets too high or too low in any given time by a full 10 or 15%, which, by the way, that number equates to the trillion range, with a $17, $18 trillion stock market, 10% of that is a very, very big number in the trillions. But imagine how much plays into just, imagine the thought of just emotion and sentiment being the difference between several trillion dollars. And that's the reality of the world we live in. So we were talking about the psychology of loss. Again, we have this really bad week. The headline says it's the worst something ever. So you think to yourself, wait a minute, is this the worst stock market week ever? The answer is no. We've had lots of days that have trumped the week that we just lived through. In 2009, we had several minus 5-6% days. December 2008 was down almost 9% in a day. April 14th, 2000, down 6% almost in one day. But then on the other side of the coin, the very same years, the emotional froth went the other way too. March 23, 2009, up 7%. November 13, 2008, up 6.92%. All in, these are one day moves for the S&P 500. March 16th, 2000, up 4.76%. All in one day. So why does it feel so bad every time this happens, this panic? Yet there's no, or let's say there's little emotional reaction when the market does well. So it feels really bad when things go down, but there's, you don't get a lot of emotion when things are going well. And very simply, that's the human brain. And that is, we are wired that way. In fact, this is a test that has been done over and over and over again in the study of neuroeconomics. So as an example, there's a study, and I've seen this repeated a couple times. Let's say there's a coin toss, and I say to you, heads you win $100, tails you lose $100. Are you going to take the bet? The answer is probably not. The vast majority of people will not make that bet. In fact, economists call that a rational bet. Up 100, down 100, it's a 50-50 shot. But most people will insist, in order to make a wager like that, on a winning payoff that's at least $200, if not more, or $300, in order to I have to win $200 or $300 in order to take the chance of losing $100. So there needs to be compensation for the potential pain of losing that $100. So very simply, losing feels twice as painful as gaining the same amount feels good. I'll say that again. Losing money feels twice as painful as gaining the same amount of money feels good. A lot of emotional factors here. So number one of these, and this is one of the mistakes we make, and this is how we've been wired over millions of years. We are the subject of recency, or we're the victim of recency. So there's this human tendency that we make long-term assumptions based on what just happened. So on recent or very recent outcomes. Let's go back to 1999. 1999, after five straight years, stocks up 20% plus, 96, 7, 8, 9. Investors expected for the next year, hey, what's the market going to do next year? Well, the market, the sentiment in a very large survey was that the market will do 18.5% next year. That sounds awesome. 18.5% next year. But then in March of 2003, after we had several annual losses in 2000, 2001, 2002, what did investors expect? Remember, market averages 10.5%, 11% a year. Investors only expected about 6% the next year. So following several good years, we expected a great year. Following several bad years, we expected a relatively flat year as far as markets are concerned, a lower than average year. The results, the predictions, were exactly backwards. Instead of 18.5%, investors got -9% in the year 2000. And then the 12 months following March of 2000, where investors were expecting only a 6% gain, they got a whopping 35% to the upside. So we are victims of something called recency. We're victims of this. So in the violently down week we just had, the good news here is that diversification really did work this week. It worked like it was supposed to work. So we had U.S. stocks were down, sure, plus 6% plus. By the way, utilities were not. Utilities were only down, they were down less than 0.5%. So defensive areas actually held up pretty darn well. Utilities were flat to down 0.5% in a market down 6 or 7. That's a pretty stark difference. Bonds, by the way, bond prices were up at least a little bit. So BND, and there's several of these ETFs that I track. The Vanguard Total Bond Market Index symbol BND was up 0.5% in price just on the week. The corporate bond ETF that I track, LQD, was up 0.4%. on the week. MUB, which is a large municipal bond, it's a national municipal bond ETF. So these are state and local government bonds that have a very, very high implied quality, very low probability to default, very much like a government treasury, up 0.6% on the week. Even high yield bonds, even junk bonds, looked relatively stable versus the rest of the market. So junk bonds that have suffered towards the end of last year as markets got really volatile were down less than 1% on the week in price, despite the market being down 6-7%. So a lot of all these other conservative areas that we've talked about here on the show so many times did their job. They did their job in a given week where looked like there was carnage everywhere, and there really wasn't. The carnage really was in the risk side of the market, which is the stock side of the market, or the growth bucket that we talk about here on Money Matters. What are the buckets again? A quick reminder. We have the cash bucket, which is complete safety and almost zero yield in the world we live in today. Again, you can find a 1% CD, but banks don't want to do that for you. I had a client call me this week who has some CDs at a bank that were a little over 1%. They're renewing this week, and they wanted to give I want to say 0.4% or 0.3% on the automatic renewal. Well, if you talk to them, and typically, especially if it's a bank where you can actually talk to a real live person, you can usually negotiate getting close to maybe even right at or above, slightly above the 1% level. But banks don't want to do that. They're not going to just do that for everybody. You've got to ask, you've got to prod them a little bit. But again, let's say cash is 0-1%. Income bucket is the next bucket, which that's filled with various bonds, government bonds, municipal bonds, corporate bonds, high yield bonds, that yield anywhere from 1% on the low end for high safety, short-term bonds, all the way up to 6-7% for high yield or junk bonds. But that bucket, the income bucket, is there for steady interest and stability in times like we're living through right now. We're there to get a little bit of interest and have them not get decimated or stay flat, maybe even go up like we saw this week, when markets or risk assets get a little bit volatile. Then there's the growth bucket. The growth bucket can be growth stocks that pay no dividend. Google is an example of that. It's a company that continues to grow earnings. They don't pay anything, but they've had a very solid internal rate of return or lots of capital appreciation. That's, again, pretty hard to find. Hence, we had these FANG stocks last year, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, were four outliers that were up a lot in an otherwise generally down market. You take out those four big stocks and the average stock in the S&P 500 in 2015 was actually down 4%. Inside the growth bucket, we can also focus in on dividend payers. So dividend paying stocks that'll give you a consistent quarterly cash flow. Those yields are going to be anywhere from 2.5-5%. Where do we find them? There's 10 big S&P 500 sectors. Five of them, half of those sectors, are more oriented towards dividends. Staple companies, so think of soda and soap. Tobacco, you can throw in the staple category as well. And some of those, again, you're going to get 2% all the way up to 5% in some of those areas. Healthcare, utilities, telecommunications, some energy companies, those are still, even though oil has gotten crushed in price, big energy companies like Chevron and Exxon still have a very solid balance sheet. They're not going anywhere in our lifetime, and they pay significant dividends. And then technology. New technology companies that are rapidly growing like Google and Amazon, they do not pay a dividend. But older line, what I would consider more staple utility companies like Intel and Microsoft that have been around for 20 plus years, and they're a staple of American infrastructure, technological infrastructure, there you can find payouts in the 2-4% range. And these, again, are technology companies. So those five sectors, that's about half of the S&P 500, that's half of the 10 sectors of the S&P 500 are oriented towards dividend payers. And that's the growth bucket. Then you have one more important piece of the equation, and that's the alternative income bucket. That's where you'll find income from preferred stocks and REITs and pipeline companies. No one bucket works unless you have a really high risk tolerance. If you're under 50 and you can take lots of volatility, you can have everything in the growth bucket, and you can have an all stock portfolio. And for some people, that's fine. And depending on your age, that could be very appropriate. But all of those areas really do work well together. they soften out the peaks and the valleys of any given market, and that again comes with the emotional froth that comes along with investing. And if you put all those buckets together, it can help shelter your brain that we just talked about and your portfolio from all the pitfalls that we have gone over today. Recency is one of them. Making emotional decisions and all the emotional decisions that investors make that in the long run really hurt them. So a plan and a strategy and some sort of approach to how you're invested really, really helps over time. In fact, in my opinion, unless you have this absolute high tolerance for volatility and risk, you've got to have some sort of balance like this, or else you get thrown completely off track when we go through weeks like we just went through. All right, the number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. We'll open up the phone lines, 1-800-WSB-TALK. You are listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Find me at wesmoss.com. If you have a question, contact button on the left-hand side of my website. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. We'll get back to you if you need to have a conversation or sit down and really talk through something that's a little more complicated for you and your family that has to do with financial planning, investing, or tax. We are here to do that. We're in Atlanta, and we're happy to do so. Straight ahead, more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll cover breaking news, Kirk Mellis weather, and traffic red alerts throughout the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. As we go to the phones, 404-872-0750 here this morning. We'll start with, let's see here, Abby in Lithonia. Abby, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can we help?
Hello, good morning. I was just wondering if you could give an older female divorcee some advice. I've never invested before, but I'm a professional and I have a couple thousand a month that I can use to do something for myself. So somebody starting from scratch, perhaps a lesson to all the other young ladies out there. What can you suggest?
I was going to ask you, Abby, because you have that British accent, that slight British accent that makes you sound so unbelievably smart. I want you to tell me. I want to ask Abby from Lithonia, where should we go? Here's my thought. If you're newer at doing this and you've paid off debt and it's time to start now actually putting money away so it will work for you, I'm a big believer in dividend payers. So you don't have to go out and buy individual companies. So you don't have to go buy Philip Morris and Altria and Procter & Gamble as individual companies. You don't need to go buy Southern Company. But what you can do, as I think a really good starting point, will be to find ETFs, exchange-traded funds. Those are similar to mutual funds, but more tax-efficient and lower cost. And start putting those on, investing in some of these ETFs. I'll give you a couple in a second. And then putting those on dividend reinvest. At your age right now, you can continue to get to, you still have a ways to go to retirement. You can do dividend reinvest or manually let the dividends come into your account and then buy more of other areas. That's kind of personal preference. But if you look at utility companies, instead of buying one utility, look at an ETF called X, or the symbol is XLU. That's a basket of about 30 utility companies. XLP is the ETF for consumer staple companies. These are ideas that allow you to get your foot in the water. You own, for the most part, inside of those ETFs, they're baskets of high quality companies that have been able to pay dividends for a very long time, and then you can continue to reinvest and reinvest. A broader market way to do this would be looking at Vanguard's dividend growth ETF, or appreciation ETF, symbol is VIG. So a couple of areas to get started with as if you're a newer investor looking for income. You're listening to Money Matters. More in the 10 o'clock hour, your money, your brain, and your calls and questions answered here, right here on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB.